It is now 6:30 and I call this meeting to order. Will you please rise for this flag salute, Councilor Onslow?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Julie, can you please call roll?
Councilmember Onslow?
Here.
Councilmember Coker?
Present.
Councilmember Wells?
Here.
Councilmember Chipman?
Here.
Councilmember Cole?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Akeley?
Here.
Mayor Lindsay?
Here. Mr. Stewart, are there any late changes to the agenda?
No late changes, Mayor.
Great, thank you. Ms. Notneras, I believe you have a new employee to introduce us to this evening.
I do, thank you. I am very excited to introduce Ireland. She is our new events coordinator, has worked now for 4 days. We are very excited to have her. She has event experience in Pullman. She worked with the city and with the chamber in coordinating events there. And most recently, on Swan Island, she worked for an equipment rental company who specializes in renting for events, like tables and canopies and linens and all of those kinds of things that we use quite a bit. And she is very happy now to be commuting a very short distance. She does live in Ridgefield. And we are very happy to have her. August is a really event-heavy month, so we're going to put her right to work after she comes back from getting married in a week. So happy to have her here.
Well, welcome. We're glad to have you, and congratulations on getting married. All right. Great. Thank you. Okay. All right. It is now time for public comment. Anyone wishing to address City Council regarding items not subject to a specific public hearing may come forward at this time to the podium or use the raise hand feature located on the toolbar at the bottom of your Zoom screen. For controls over the phone, press *9 for raise hand and press *6 to mute unmute. Please state your name and limit comments to 3 minutes. Do we have anyone who would like to give public comment? Please come to the podium.
My name is Heather Gordon. I live at 627 South 25th Place in the city of Ridgefield. My neighborhood is accessed via Bertzinger Road and also Northeast 15th Avenue. The property across the street from me is under development and has been for over a year. I am here to make sure the council knows how absolutely horrible it is for me and my neighbors to live in the city right now. To live on a city road that has, for a full year, been uneven, unpaved, and treacherous. It's a rocky, gravelly strip of potholes that has been created by the constant and steady use of the road by double trailer rock carriers, shovel tractors, dump trucks, and backhoes. My house literally shakes as these vehicles travel the road. The noise of backup signals and heavy machinery is constant during the week. There is dust and more dust. For this development, they cut down 2 dozen old trees to replace the space with a huge water reservoir that is filled with muddy water. This reservoir has run over numerous times, flowing into G Creek. The environmental protection people were called on the company, and the company has tried to make it better, though with our wet spring, the road flooded and muddy water flowed into G Creek frequently, threatening stream life. And this had never happened prior to the development. The current site is an eyesore. The company doing this work is Rachi. They often appear to be improvising. The nicest thing I can say about them is that each time they have knocked out my internet due to lack of planning, they work to get it restored quickly. Apart from that, they have, according to city employee Dustin Weichman, sent their D team to my neighborhood to get the work done. I am not by nature a complainer, and I tried for a year to be patient and just get through this phase, only contacting the city when I needed answers. I don't truly know what role you all have in this. I've been told these guys can only be slowed down or made to work more respectfully if they break ordinances. The problem is I don't think there are enough city workers to be checking on the development. If so, I'm sure the company would have been cited for things like speeding with work vehicles and not using flaggers as required, both things I've witnessed this week. It's exciting that Ridgefield is growing so quickly, but at what cost? I can tell you that my neighbors and I are not happy to be in Ridgefield on our street. Finally, I am requesting three things. There should be prompt attention to our road to make it all drivable, all of it. We should ask, require, enforce that construction companies use the land they are developing as they move their equipment around, rather than rely on city streets, as they seem to be doing in my neighborhood. Finally, we should restrict development permit approvals to a rate that allows city staff to reasonably monitor work sites. The next time you have a few minutes, Council, I appreciate it if you take a drive up Bertzinger Road and take a look. Thank you for your time and for your consideration.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to give public comment this evening?
Hi, I'm Michael Jennings. There's the waterfront, the Ridgefield waterfront improvement that is planned by the port is a huge intellectual challenge, and I hope that the city people, city managers, and everybody who's in charge of running the city will get involved in that, because it could be a huge mess that makes Ridgefield less interesting. And then second thing, does anybody want a free, a large suitcase?
Is there anyone else wishing to give public comment this evening? Not seeing anyone in person or online. We'll be moving on to the consent agenda. Council, I would ask for a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Ms. Mayor, I move to accept the consent agenda as published.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. All right. This evening we have some presentations. Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mayor. I actually don't have introductions for either of the presentations. We were just going to have the presenters introduce themselves and their topics, but since you called on me, we have two presentations for you this evening to give more information for the council and for the residents about a couple of important ballot measures that they will see on their ballots, which they will receive this weekend for the August 2nd election. And we wanted to make sure that not only council, but our residents had additional information from a couple of our key partners with Ridgefield School District and with Clark Cowlitz Fire and Rescue. So we have Superintendent McCann, and we have Chief Knorr and Chief Jackson here to do those presentations for you.
Great, thank you. And I think we'll start with Dr. McCann with the Ridgefield School District.
Good evening, thank you, Mayor Lindsay. Good evening, councilors, City Manager Stewart, and city staff. Thanks for giving us this opportunity to just share a little bit about the upcoming school levy. It's our tagline is One Levy, Unlimited Possibilities, and I'll talk a little bit more about the uniqueness of Ridgefield and One Levy. Next slide, please. I do want to spend a minute because I think it's always worth it, because there's a difference between levies and bonds, and we're here tonight to talk about a levy. So I come in peace. It is with the levy that we're talking about. So bonds, as everyone knows, are for capital needs, which we have extensive capital needs. The growth in Ridgefield is real. It's been consistent. This is the start of my ninth year as superintendent. We continue to be one of the fastest growing communities in Washington. But tonight we're about levies. Next slide, please. And so there are a couple of things. Proposition 9, which you'll see on the ballot, and that will arrive as early as for some people, possibly tomorrow, but many of us will get it Saturday if we check our mail regularly. So you'll look for Proposition 9 on the ballot. It's not a new tax. This is a replacement educational program, an operation levy, and it replaces a levy that is currently in existence. And I'll talk more about the tax rate, but the levy tax rate will not change with the passage of Proposition 9. This would provide the continuation of levy funding for the years 2023, 2024, and 2025. I'd ask you to think for a second, what would happen in your own household if suddenly 13% of the household's revenue was to disappear? You would absolutely have to make some fairly substantive decisions to alter expenditures. And those might be some of the things that you take the most joy in. And so it could be things like a quick trip to ski or a night out at Taps or RCB or something like that. All those things go away. It's the things that kind of complete a full life for you. In a school district, it operates the same way. Our levy is 13% of the operating budget for the Ridgefield School District. And it supports all these things that the state of Washington does not determine as or define as basic education. The school district does. As a parent in the school district, I absolutely think that football and robotics and performance arts and additional nurses to make sure that we actually are staffed with a nurse in each building in the district, school counseling services, mental health services, all of those things, those are part of what I think is the responsibility of a school district provide. Basic ed, the revenue that we receive through the apportionment formula in the state of Washington, does not cover all of the extracurriculars, and it does not cover things like nursing services and counselors at a rate that the district believes is essential to support students. Next slide, please, Julie. So this is what you'll see, and this is probably the biggest thing that I draw to any patron's attention that will be voting in this election. On the ballot, it will actually show an estimated levy rate and then the levy amount. We do it a little differently. By law, we have to put a dollar figure. That's what the voters are authorizing the district to levy up to. But the practice of the school district has been to keep a commitment to a levy of $1.50 per $1,000 of assessed value. So I can tell you emphatically that that will be the maximum rate in years 2023, 2024, and 2025. We will not levy beyond that. So what that means is if the authority in 2023 is for a little over $9 million and the voters say, yes, Ridgefield School District, you can tax that, and then we were to levy for that and to capture all that $9,053,000, it would require a levy rate of, say, $1.61. The board would take action and cap the levy at $1.50. So we would actually be taking in revenues below that $9,053,000. We've done this each of the last 3 years. This has been the practice in the district since the McCleary school finance resolution that happened back in 2018, and the district remains committed to that. So I can say emphatically to anyone that asks a question, well, what will the new levy rate be? Because it changes in other school districts. In Ridgefield, our levy rate will stay $1.50. What that actually draws in revenue is dependent on the total assessed valuation that $1.50 will bring in. Next slide, please, Julie. I think a lot of folks rightfully think, well, geez, there was the McCleary resolution just a few years ago. Didn't that solve school finance in Washington State? It definitely enhanced salaries for teachers and support staff and administrative staff throughout districts across Washington, made that more competitive with other states across the country. What it didn't do, though, is it didn't change the definition of what basic education is. So all those things a little earlier in the presentation I talked about as basic education, those are as what we consider whole child education. The state doesn't define as basic education. So there are just a handful of the very smallest districts, all districts of less than 100 students, of which there are a few really small districts in Washington that don't operate with a levy. Every other district operates with a levy or faces very difficult choices, as several districts will be in the northern part of the state this year because they had a double levy failure and will not be able to capture that revenue to support all their children programming. And their school district will change substantially as a result of that in terms of what they can offer and the fairness for every single student. Because while some students might be able to say, well, I could still go ahead and pay to play football, or I could still pay to be in the school play, there are other kids that can't. And the district's not going to run programs that allow for some students to pay and then keeps other students out because they don't have the economic resources to do so. So the levy remains absolutely essential. What makes Ridgefield different from most of our peer districts, both in Southwest Washington and many throughout the state, is that we have one levy. We have one levy also at $1.50. We're the second lowest school tax rate in all of Clark County. And we have a levy at $1.50. So we have peer districts that might have one levy that's something north of $2, or they have several levies, and that first levy, the educational enrichment levy, might still be north of $1.50, but then they have a capital levy to support, say, technology upgrades, et cetera. That might be a 50-cent levy. So they've got levies that are in excess of $2 or $2.50 or more. That they're using to support their programming. In Ridgefield, we've been committed to one levy, and we keep it at $1.50 per $1,000 of assessed valuation. Next slide, please. So the other big question people will sometimes say is, well, I want, like, what does the levy pay for? Literally, it touches every single student and program throughout the district. It pays for all of the educational enrichment activities that happen in the district. So if it's extracurricular, before or after school, it's being supported by the levy. If it's CISPUS outdoor school, that's all levy funding. Special education staff and services, I was just in Washington, D.C., and we again advocated for the federal support for additional funding for special education, which has never been close to the federal commitment of 40%. The state continues to not be able to bring in the totality of funding to support special education student services in school districts. Levies pick up a significant amount of that. Additional school counseling and nursing services I had mentioned, we staff above the prototypical model, which also allows us to keep class sizes at smaller levels. We're really proud of the class sizes we have in Ridgefield. We think that allows for the personalization and the tailoring of the academic day for students, and we think that's essential to their growth and maturation. All of that technology that other districts use a technology levy for, or what's called a capital levy, Ridgefield does it with our enrichment levy at $1.50. So we are a 1-to-1 K through 12 Chromebook district. So every single student in the district has access to a take-home Chromebook that they use. Community education programming, the Family Resource Center, student transportation for all of activities and extracurriculars and events, all of that comes with support from the levy. It is really the lifeblood of everything that many of our children, like, that's the draw why they're in school. Next slide, please, Julie. So I just wanted to real quickly, because it's a big list, so I won't take but a minute or two on this, but it's more just for you to kind of look at, almost in awe, and you take a look at all of these activities. Our kids, Ridgefield students, stand out. They excel on the stage, on the fields and the courts, in robotics competitions, speech and debate, et cetera. We have exceptionally talented students that flourish in these programs. So there's a list just of some of the activities, and then we can keep going, Julie, because there's a lot. You see everything that happened in fall athletics, none of that's possible. That's all levy funding again. Next slide, you see a continuation. We had the best football season that Ridgefield's had in many, many years. Again, that's the levy at work. Volleyball, the only team volleyball lost to was Columbia River, who won the state championship. They had previously won two state championships pre-COVID, too. This is an extremely talented program, all levy funded. Next couple slides, please. You see the same story in winter athletics. And then spring athletics as well. Again, all levy funding supporting these activities and what makes the Ridgefield School District so special. There's only one frequently asked question that I wanted to make sure that everyone's crystal clear on tonight, because I think it also like goes back to the growth challenges that the council continues to be faced with as well. And there will be people that will say, well, what about just using impact fees? Can't we do that? No, developer impact fees are for growth projects. So capital projects that serve growth in the district, we can use school impact fees for. We can't use school impact fees for operation programs such as everything that the levy funds. And then just a couple of things. The ballot will come as early for some people tomorrow. People will have through August 2nd. That's Election Day. As always, please, I encourage you to encourage folks that talk to you to participate. It's doing their civic duty. The good news with school levies is it's a 50% threshold, unlike school bonds, which are a 60% plus one threshold. And there are two drop boxes here in Richfield. There's the one right here at the rack, and then there's the one at the park and ride over at 65th. All ballots have to be in one of those or one of the other drop boxes in the county by 8 o'clock on election night, or postmarked by election day in order to count in the election. So I wanted to do this, and I did it in a little less than 15 minutes, but still longer than I wanted to take because it's a beautiful summer evening. But if you have any questions, I'm happy to take those briefly, but I know Chief Norris is also anxious to get in front of you.
Thank you, Dr. McCann. Council, does anyone have any questions?
I have one comment.
Go ahead.
The other drop box isn't at the park and ride. It's in the cul-de-sac by AMPM.
Oh, I think no, it just got moved to the park and ride.
I stand corrected. Yeah. I'll go to the right place.
Yes.
Anyone else? Okay, well, thank
All
you
right.
for coming
thank
in.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay.
I've been I've been listening to a lot of governmental activities. Do you cede your time to me now, or reserve, or something like that? All right, thank you. I do have a little cough tonight. It is seasonal allergies. I do not have COVID. I have been tested. But thank you all for being here. Just want to give a little update on an emergency medical services levy that we have before you. So thank you, Mayor Lindsay, for having us, members of council. So a little bit about the district. So we serve three cities. We're a combination department. What that means is we have career firefighters that we pay to be firefighters, and we have volunteer firefighters. And that helps save money for the residents. We serve Ridgefield, Le Center, and Woodland, as well as the Cowlitz Indian Reservation by contract, and about 125 square miles of unincorporated Clark County. We responded last year to just shy of 5,000 emergency incidents. Up there is a map showing what we do. It's about 45,000 residents. Actually, we got an updated number just recently from GIS. We're up to about 48,000 residents. In fact, we sent out a mailer to all residents, and in just 2 years, 2 years ago, August, since then, we're over 1,900 new addresses in the district. So it's not just Richfield, but we're growing across the district. And so I talked about that a little bit. We got 14 miles of I-5 and BNSF Railroad. A lot of hazmats and other things move through that. What a lot of people don't think about is we also have a lot of riverfront along Lake River, the Columbia River, and the Lewis Rivers, both forks. What we do fire suppression, emergency medical response, and both the what we call the BLS, which is basic life support, and ALS, advanced life support. About 50% of the time, we can have a paramedic on our rigs. The rest of the time, it's EMTs. We do technical rescue because those calls are very labor-intensive and very rare. We don't staff a tech team ourselves. We're a member of a tech team with the Vancouver Fire Department and Fire District 6 south of us. You know, examples would be people caught in machinery. When there was some development going on down by the middle school, a gentleman got injured about 30 feet down in a tunnel, so we used the tech team to get him out. So that's what technical rescue is. We have a marine division, so down in the marina here, we have a boathouse that has a rescue boat and a fire boat. That we respond to the Columbia River. We're part of a network of departments up and down the river doing maritime fire safety as well as recreational safety. We also have a community risk reduction program where we do fire marshal services for the three cities, and we also have a lot of programs in play that help reduce the frequency that people call 911. We try to get them hooked up with the right services. And as I always say to it, it's better to respond to somebody at an appointment at 2 in the afternoon than to get the call at 2 in the morning and go out and deal with a problem that's gotten worse. Thank you. Okay. So we operate under a balanced budget. We pass all of our audits. We've taken a lot of strides towards financial stability during my tenure here. This is my sixth year here with the district. We have an elected board of commissioners, five commissioners elected from throughout the district. That they are my bosses. They govern what we do. We have two board meetings a month, the second and fourth Thursday of the month at our main station here in Ridgefield. Okay. So some of the challenges, our call volume is up 17.6%. It went up from 2020 to 2021. It's even up even more for the first half of 22. We ran 4,982 calls last year. We're up 57% since 2016, but the district's boundaries have not changed. The only thing that changed during that time is Woodland used to be a contract service with us. They've now annexed into the district, similar to the Ridgefield and the center. But our boundaries are the same since 2016. That's a big number to jump up. If you look at the year over year, most fire and emergency service departments plan for 5 to 7% year over year. To have a nearly 18% jump for us, it's hard to maintain our ability to respond to all those incidents. Our response times are also increasing. So we're up about 11% in the length of time it gets for us to get there. So we are a time-based operation. You know, from the time somebody calls 911, CRESA, that's the Clark Regional Emergency Service Agency, they process the call, they tap us out, they alert us to the call. We what we call a turnout time. Firefighters get 60 seconds to get in the proper gear, whether it's for emergency medical or fire, get on the rig and get rolling, and then get to an incident. And that's what we call a response time. And those are up 11%. Next. Those are just some examples of our calls. You'll see that the numbers are slightly different. Like at the end, it says in 2021, we had 4,700 and change. But that doesn't include is what we call mutual aid calls. So we are partners with all the other fire departments around. We're partners with Fire District 6 to the south. So if it's something near their border and they need one of our units, we go. If it's something on our east side and we need a unit from Fire District 3, they come into us. So the numbers are slightly different because these are just calls within the district, but they play out the same. It's up 57% since 2016. Thank you. That is just a little bit of incident by type, fire versus EMS. You'll see that EMS does make up a majority of our incident types. These are our priority one and two incidents. So priority ones and twos on EMS is something severe. You're having a cardiac arrest, your cardiac chest pain, breathing difficulty, anaphylaxis, traumatic injury where you're bleeding out, something that's a threat to life. So that's the change in our priority one and two calls over that period of time. So part of the challenge is that we have traditionally staffed our units with two personnel. And so it's a firefighter and a company officer, which we call a captain, and they are both either EMTs or one is an EMT and one is a paramedic. Oftentimes, a significant medical incident requires three responders to stabilize the patient. So what we end up doing is sending two units to get three responders on scene. Most other departments of like size and response types have three people on their engines. So City of Longview has three people on their engines. Fire District 6, Hazeldale, Phillida, Salmon Creek, they have three-person engines. Vancouver runs three-person engines. If you get to some bigger cities, they get four or five. That's not necessary here, but the district feels that three-person engines are necessary for us to handle the type of responses that we most frequently go to. With more units out of service, now we take two units out of service, and more call volume stacking on top of that, we end up crisscrossing the district trying to cover that. So an engine from farther away may have to come cover an incident because two engines are out of service on an incident over here. So the stacking effect of more calls and more two-unit calls is causing our response times to lengthen out. We do have a paramedic on our units about 50% of the time. It's just a little over 50% of the time. Those are just kind of to show you the double incidents. So most of our incidents will be a single unit response. And in the bar graph shows how many incidents have two units, how many incidents have three units, and so on. So you see the majority of our EMS calls, they're handled by one or two incidents. When you start getting into fire calls, you may have to have three or four units on it. Thank you. And that's just the same count for the next year. Another part of the challenge is ambulance response. So we are piggybacked on a contract that the City of Vancouver holds with American Medical Response Ambulance. And so we're in what's called EMS District 2. And that's made up of the cities of Ridgefield, Le Centre, Woodland, Battleground, and unincorporated Clark County, excluding a couple other areas. But predominantly it's Hazeldale, Battleground area, our area up here. That it used to be a contract that was administered by the county prior to 2015 when City of Vancouver, I tactfully say, they kind of strong-armed it away from the county and changed up some terms on it. And the unincorporated county and the small cities were left with, here's what you get. If you don't like it, go find something else. So that's what we've been dealing with since 2015. Ambulances are not meeting the response time requirements. In our area here, they're required to be to the incidents 90% of the time, 20 minutes or less. If you go south of 179th, they have to be to the incidents 90% of the time in 12 minutes or less. The City of Battleground was a carve-out that has to be 12 minutes or less, but everywhere up here is 20 minutes. And that's really outside kind of the standard response that you would expect for an ambulance. Those times were put in place when a contract somewhat got forced on us, and we were a more rural fire district. But as we grow up, there's more demand. Let me see what a couple of those points are. Ambulance response times have gone up nearly 9% since 2019. But what's really shocking to me is the number of ambulance responses over 20 minutes. Last year, the first 6 months of last year, over 20 minutes to our area was 176 calls. The first 6 months of this year, 220 calls. It just keeps going up. And I've got several examples here. I'm going to try only share a couple of you because I know the time is sensitive, of calls that have impacted patients here in Ridgefield and in other areas in our service district. Go ahead. So that's the example of AMR response times and how they've gone up since 2016 to the last year being 2021. Next. So what we have before the voters of the district is emergency medical services levy. It's 50 cents per thousand for 6 years, and it will allow us to hire 25 personnel to have a paramedic on every rig every day, as well as staffing an additional unit that puts a sixth unit in our system to help cover those call volumes. I should tell you a little bit about EMS levies. The way fire districts are funded, on the fire side, you're allowed to collect it, the voters vote for it, up to $1.50 per thousand. What a lot of districts will do is they will subsidize EMS calls out of their fire fund, which is what CCFR has done for years. There was, when this was Fire District 12, an EMS levy in 2002 that went through 2008, and the district let it expire at that time. They merged with Fire District 11, became CCFR. But a lot of districts do it. Fire District 6 in Hazeldale's had a EMS levy for years. The Camas-Washougal Fire Department, the two cities have a combined fire department. They have an EMS levy, and they provide ambulance service through that EMS levy. Residents that live in Amboy and Yakult, they have an EMS levy. The only major districts in the county that don't are us and Fire District 3, which is Battleground Hawkinson. Vancouver Fire, it's built into their city levy. It's a common way for fire departments to fund EMS services. Thank you. Okay. So what it will do, hire 25 personnel. We'll move from 5 staffed units per day to 6 staffed units per day throughout the district. We will have 3 personnel every day instead of 2 on the primary response units. Each unit will have a paramedic each day. We'll have to hire an EMS training officer. Well, not that we have to, but we will hire an EMS training officer to help keep everybody up to speed on their advanced life support training, as well as keeping our EMTs highly skilled. And the district currently owns 2 ambulances. We don't utilize them for runs at this time because we're part of the contract with AMR through EMS District 2 in the City of Vancouver. We would replace the 2 ambulances with new ambulances, and we will staff an ambulance. And we will respond on high-priority incidents or when AMR can't make the response time and transport district residents to the hospital. Ambulance is a business, and the most efficient way to run some businesses is to be as busy as you can all the time. emergency services is not a business. It's here to save people's lives. And so what you want is somebody in service to respond to your incident when you have an incident. That's the clash. That's the classic age-old clash between an ambulance business and emergency service. Next, please. So multi-unit responses will go down dramatically because we'll have three-person staffing on units. We won't have to send two units to handle some of our more common incidences. That will help response times across the district decrease. We will have a paramedic on every call, so we won't have to call one of our second units over once in a while if we have a significant EMS call and we're waiting on the ambulance. So we'll have ALS care on scene sooner. We'll be capable of transporting patients when the private provider is unable to do so. And what that does also is it frees up some funding that's coming out of the general fund right now to help support EMS services will be paid for through the EMS levy. That frees up some money, and we can move forward on some capital things that we're looking to do, which includes building the fire station on Hillhurst, as well as finishing out the station in Woodland. And those are our two big capital items that we're really looking at right now. Next. Okay. That concludes my presentation there. I always love this call. This is our technical rescue team, our rescue swimmers. We end up going out in the Lewis River and the Columbia River quite a bit. What you don't see right above them is a Coast Guard helicopter. We work a lot with other partners that is above them to make the waters choppy, but that's always my sink or swim slide, so it's time for us to swim and not sink. And what I do want to point out to you real quick is just a couple incidents that I've kept track of. They're coming in so fast I had to handwrite a few of them here. But here is a at 22:30 hours, 10:30 p.m., downtown Ridgefield, anaphylaxis. We had a middle-aged lady that was in true anaphylaxis. Throat is swollen shut, tongue is swollen up, can't breathe, and AMR is at level zero. Level zero is what they say when they have no ambulances. So our unit from the Ridgefield station responded, but we didn't have a paramedic on that day. We just had two EMTs. They called Engine 23 from the center to come over, and because AMR couldn't field an ambulance, we had to call our friends at North Country EMS, which is the ambulance service. It's a public ambulance service paid for by tax dollars in the northeast part of the county, and they came from their Farger Lake station to transport her to the hospital. To me, unacceptable. We had another incident just before midnight in Ridgefield, a abdominal pain, AMR is at level zero. We called in an off-duty paramedic to give pain medications. The person's in severe pain. The ambulance arrived 48 minutes later. Let me do it right. 48 minutes after dispatch, and we called somebody from home, woke them up and said, hey, I know you're not on duty today, but can you come down here and give meds, because we didn't have a medic on the rig that day. We had two EMTs on the rig. And it's in daybreak. Let's jump down. Ridgefield, Acero Apartments, prior A2 chest pain. This is a person that says, give me, rate your pain 8 out of 10, or you know, on a scale of 10. I'm 8 out of 10, an elephant sitting under my chest. And we're waiting for an ambulance there at level zero. We had to call another engine over with a medic on it to help treat. 50, that's not 15, it's 50 minutes to get an ambulance there. As I go on down, I'm just trying to find Ridgefield incidents, you know, for folks here. Pioneer Canyon, AMR level zero, 9-year-old with breathing difficulty. After waiting on scene 21 minutes, the mother says, I'll take him to the hospital. And she drove him to the hospital. And we're like, you know, it's not really against medical advice, but we think this person should be with a medic going to the hospital. She took him herself. So multiple calls out there. Acero Apartments on 7-5, cardiac atrial fibrillation, 68-year-old male, AMR at level zero. This is symptomatic AFib, and waited over 28 minutes. At the 28-minute mark, the patient said, I'll drive myself to the hospital. And right then, AMR said, oh, well, we have an ambulance on. It's too late. They're taking themselves to the hospital. They've waited too long. So we want the ability to get paramedics on scene sooner. We want the ability to transport patients from our community, keeping our community safe when our contracted partners aren't able to do so. Now, I know you're going to say, but it's a contract. You must be able to do something. Well, we do get some fine fees if they exceed the times, and they have to pay a fine. But I don't like saying to our folks, hey, I know it's been 28 minutes. We're going to get some fine dollars out of this. That'd be great. But they want to go to the hospital. You know? So we need to be able to answer the needs of our citizens. Thank you, Steve, for the time. Any questions for me on that? I know I've talked a long time.
Okay. Council, any questions for Chief? Okay, go ahead, Mayor Pro Tem.
So I was at the Main Street meeting this morning, and I forgot the operations guy's name.
Chief Peeler, Ben Peeler.
He did a good job, answered a lot of questions. But I learned, I think he believed, he said that we need 60% plus one on this.
Yes, this is a new tax, so it takes a supermajority. It's a 60% plus one tax.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you also say on the last slide it said funding will be available for capital improvements for the, you mentioned the new fire station. Are you able to fund that if this passes? Correct. Then is that what I'm hearing, or you don't need to do another levy for that?
Correct. There's two forms of bonding. There's internal bonding and external bonding. So an external bond is when you go to the voters and say we need a bond for this. An internal bond is, they call it a limited obligation bond, but it's essentially a mortgage, you know, on a fire station. So we would use internal money, operational money, and we can do an internal. So the district, and it's based on valuation. So you, based on your valuation, you can have a certain amount that you can loan money on, and there's a certain amount that the voters can bond. And we're nowhere close to that. And so some places, for example, District 6, if you've been down in Salmon Creek, they built a new station right off Salmon Creek, right off 134th. And they did that internally with money they saved and not have to go to a bond to the voters. So, yes, that's, you know, how we've bought fire equipment. We buy it internally. You know, when interest rates were low, we bought fire engines and a ladder truck at 1.4 and 1.6%. And it's easier than going out and getting a capital bond for high-cost capital items like apparatus or stations.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yep.
Councillor Onslow, I think you had a question.
Yeah, the are there a bunch of levies for the fire districts in county?
There are several this August. We did not coordinate this. In fact, we probably should have called around on that. But Fire District 6 has an EMS levy on the ballot. Fire District 5, which is the area, Orchards and Pleasant Valley area north of Vancouver, they contract with the City of Vancouver for their fire, but they're doing a levy lid lift. So they're trying to raise their fire levy back up. Fire District 10, which is Amboy and all the way out to the north end of the county, is doing a levy lid lift also.
There's a lot of information out there that's like, okay, I'm confused how many are doing this and where does the money go or where does it come from? So that's going to be a big job for you to get that word out that you're different than everybody else.
We've worked hard on this. I've made contact with more citizens than any other thing that we've done. We've had a few annexations and mergers. I will tell you that though he's not here tonight, many of you know Larry Bartell, who was our fire chief for years, retired, and he's now one of our fire commissioners. He's been tireless in setting up these meetings. I'm very appreciative for that. But we've gotten out and tried to meet as many folks as possible and explain it. There is some literature on the back I left on the table that might help explain it a little also. But I'm here to come to any community meeting, any HOA or anybody would like to learn more. Send them my way.
Thank you.
Councillor Coker, you had a question?
Yeah, real quick. I apologize. I didn't see it here tonight, but I thought in a previous presentation I heard you talk about an insurance waiver for an ambulance ride for residents.
Yes, actually, thank you for that. What many public ambulance services do, or some public ambulance services do, is if people are paying tax for the ambulance service, they will waive the copay. So, for example, if the if an incident, just for easy math, if we charge $1,000 per ambulance ride, and I think in AMR right now is at the $1,600 mark, they charge $1,600 for a ride plus mileage. And I don't mean to make fun of that, call it a ride. You're having highly skilled people in there treating you because you have an emergency. But say it's $1,000, and your insurance says you have to pay 15% of that. Your insurance will pay $750 or $850, and then you get a bill for $150. If that was the case, the fire district will write the $150 off. Camas Washougal does that. North Country does that. It's a way of saying, hey, you've paid in your taxes, so you're not going to get billed twice for that.
Councillor Wells?
I have the same question. Copay credit.
Yes.
And so you've just answered my question, so
yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
That was my question, too.
Yeah, it
great minds think alike up here.
For me, It's not easy to go to the voters and ask for money. And I've seen this, and we've talked about it in district. It was part of our previous strategic plan. It's part of our current strategic plan. How do we address this need and give people the service I think many people expect, especially people that are moving here from other places, may have had services like that already, and they don't have it here. And so I really don't want to double tax people on that. That's why I say if there's a way to say, hey, you've all paid in, we got this service, how do we make it right on the other end? And that's, again, it's a common way that some public entities do it.
I think that's it. All right. Well, thank you for this informative presentation and answering all of our questions. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Chief. Okay. The next item on the agenda, moving on to business, we have a second reading of ordinance number 1367, CaveDev LLC, petition to annex. Ms. Lust.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council, members of the public. If you recall, back in June of this year, Council had held a public hearing and first reading on the CaveDev petition to annex. Had to wait a couple meetings to bring it back for a second reading and vote, simply because we were waiting for an acknowledgement from the Department of Commerce, which we have received. All right, I'll give a quick recap here of the property information. It is 4 acres on the east side of South 85th Avenue. In this vicinity map, you can see Urban Downs subdivision to the east, and then the large parcels to the west are UNFI and Dollar Tree there in the Union Ridge area. There is just a closer image. The property is owned by CaveDev LLC. It's both adjacent to city limits and in the UGA, urban growth area, so therefore it is eligible for annexation. Per the applicant's introductory statement, the applicant has plans to develop the property in the future as possible business offices or eating establishments as allowed under the neighborhood commercial zoning. Parcels outlined in black here, this shows the current zoning in its county designation, which is neighborhood commercial with the urban holding 20 overlay. Per code, upon annexation, the designation would change to city commercial neighborhood business with the urban holding 10 overlay. This is basically the city equivalent of the existing county zoning. This annexation request has been brought forward using the direct petition method, which requires that owners of 60% or more of the land value of the proposed annexation area must sign the petition to annex. Mason Wolf is the authorized representative of the property owner, CaveDev LLC. Mr. Wolf signed the petition to annex. CaveDev LLC owns 100% of the land value of the property proposed for annexation, exceeding that 60% threshold required for the petition to annex. A couple other procedural points here. The Clark County Assessor reviewed the declaration of petition to annex, the survey, and the legal description of the property, and issued a certificate of sufficiency in May of this year. As I mentioned, the city received an acknowledgement of proposed adoption from the Department of Commerce, which is another step required prior to adoption. Remaining steps this evening, second reading and vote. If the annexation is adopted, city staff will work with county, state agencies, as well as the census to properly notice the change. That is all I have for council. Happy to take any questions.
Council, is there any questions for Ms. Lust at this time?
Nope.
I had a quick question. If something is brought, is annexed into the city, it stays in urban holding until services are available to that property. No development can occur. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Are there any services available for this property yet?
I believe there are some utilities in 85th. That's currently a city road. Mm-hmm. But I believe it's appropriate to keep the property in urban holding until such a time as it is developed with commercial use. At such time, urban holding could be removed concurrent with land use review.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Can I please have Julie read the ordinance into the record?
Thank you, Mayor. Ordinance 1367, ordinance of the City of Richfield, Washington, annexing into the corporate limits of the City of Richfield approximately 4 acres, identified as the KDEV LLC annexation area located with the Richfield Urban Growth Area, and assigning the zoning of the annexed area's neighborhood commercial with the urban holding 10 overlay.
Council, is there a motion?
I move to approve ordinance 1367 KDEV LLC petition to annex as presented.
Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor of approving?
Call the roll.
Oh. Oh, you'll call?
It was my mistake.
Okay, sorry about that. Thank you.
Councilmember Onslow?
Aye.
Councilmember Coker?
Aye.
Councilmember Wells?
Aye.
Councilmember Chipman?
Aye.
Councilmember Cole?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Akeley?
Aye.
Mayor Lindsay?
Aye. All right. Motion carries. Thank you, Council. The second item of business this evening is resolution number 613, approval of amendment to finance policy 7, number 7 of the budget. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mayor and Council members and citizens. Each year, part of our budget policies is to review our financial management policy and our budget policy. Financial policy 7 for the budget is one we're talking about currently. We'll talk about the other one here in a few minutes. So what we look for is we look to make sure that we're still looking at best practice and industry standards, and that the policies do match our current practice as well. So in the policy for the budget, the changes are to clarify legal limits at the fund level, just change the language a little bit so it's a little bit more clear in the policy for what our legal limit is. No change to what we have been doing in the past. And match language also in the financial policy so that both policies really are saying the same thing. Clarify authorization for seasonal and temporary employees. Clarify capital expenditure authorization to match current process and budget authority that has been granted by council. References were added for the capital budget that will be developed in the 2023-2024 timeframe. Council has provided a budget starting this year to go out and get a consultant to begin the process of setting up a six-year capital budget. So we wanted to address that now so we don't have to bring back the policy in the future just for that piece. Then the overall budget process was further defined to match current processes, adding additional steps that we do take to prepare the budget prior to committee and council review. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer those at this time.
Council, are there any questions for Mr. Johnson? Mayor Pro Tem?
No.
Okay. Great. I would accept a motion.
I move to adopt a resolution number 613 as presented.
Do I have a second?
Okay. I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Council. Okay. Resolution number 614, approval of amendment to financial policy 1, the financial management policies. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you again, Mayor. This particular policy is the overall financial management policy for the city and addresses everything, including the budget and how we handle our fiscal work within the city. Again, we review the policies annually to ensure the best practice and industry standards and that it matches our current practices. We updated some of the language throughout the policy for, again, more clarity. And then we proposed some changes. This is something we talked about at the council retreat, looking at the reserve policies that are within that financial management policy, and brought some proposals back to council. Specifically related to our stormwater operations, there's a change to the operations and maintenance reserve proposed. It's priority number 2. Each reserve level has a priority level. That's per what we have to do for GASB 54, so that if we don't have enough reserves to meet each priority in that order of the priority, then it changes for that to meet the higher priorities. The proposed change to the operations and maintenance reserve, which has a purpose to pay operating expenses month to month given routine seasonal fluctuations in city revenues and expenses. When we first set up our policies in 2014 for the operations and maintenance reserves, we set up the operations and maintenance reserve for the general fund at 60 days of the prior year operating expense. For the water and the stormwater fund, we set them up at 90 days, being that those are utilities. The reason that we're making a change or recommending a change here for the stormwater fund is because the revenue source is a stable revenue source. Typically, in industry standards, if you have a revenue source that is not stable, that's based more on usage, then you would have a higher time frame, you know, such as the 90 days for that, which water is based, a lot of our revenue is on usage. So in the winter time, late fall time, we may have smaller revenue receipts, whereas in the summer, we have high revenue receipts. So that's why industry standards say 90 days. Since the storm fund is a stable, it's a flat fee that's charged the same throughout the year, what we're proposing and recommending is that we reduce that to 60 days of operating expense from the prior year. That would give us a little bit of ability in that particular fund, which is a small fund balance, to be able to do more work within there, especially as we're moving towards having to have a higher permit requirements probably in 2024 and after. That would change the amount that's required in the reserves by about $64,000 this year. We just recalculated all of our reserves today after we got our full information, both from the audit and then from our separation modeling. And that is something that actually would change the amount every year, because the reserve is recalculated every year depending on what the operating expense was the prior year. So this isn't a one-time change to what the amount available for use outside of the policy reserves would be. So it's estimated again at $64,000 this year, and then as work continues to grow and expenses grow, then actually there would be a difference that would continue to escalate over the years depending on the amount of expense. The next proposed change is to the capital reserve, and this is priority number 5. This one could affect all the operating funds. We're specifically targeting more the stormwater again so that there is funding available for some more capital projects in that particular fund, but again, it could be used. And it creates flexibility for council to make some decisions during the budget process. So the current purpose is to pay for unanticipated capital needs that are typically resulting from a natural disaster or other unanticipated event that will damage city infrastructure. The current policy allows for council to use that reserve if it generates revenue through the capital improvements that you use the funding for. The flexibility that we're proposing would be that we also add in that council could use the funding for any infrastructure improvements at the end of the asset's useful life or in the event of a failure of the asset, but it would take budget enactment. So staff could not make that decision to dip into those reserves to use it. We would have to come to council, and council would have to approve it. The additional piece to that particular reserve would be adding in the requirement to set up a payment plan to restore those reserves back to the minimum required amount. And that payment plan would be dependent on how much you draw down the reserves. You know, it could be if you draw it down 50% that you have to pay it in a little bit longer time period. If you draw it down, say, 10%, then you only have a couple of years at the most to restore that back to the minimum requirements. The The final recommendation is for just adding clarity to the capital repair and replacement reserve, which is priority number six. And this is just to change it to an assigned fund, and that's a definition through GASB pronouncement 54, the definition. Right now, currently, we have it in the policy as unassigned. It really should be assigned because council is making that determination. 5% of rate revenues for both the water and the stormwater go into this fund, and it is set up for capital repair and replacement at the end of the useful life. This particular fund also has that repayment plan, and we modeled the one that I just talked about a little bit ago after the repayment plan in this particular one. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Council. Councilor Onslow.
Just reading through this, I don't disagree with anything. It seemed like there was a lot of these policies that would come back to council. Are they not coming to council right now anyway? Or did you just put them in there so that it says they will come to council?
We actually do review these during the budget process every year, and if it's determined that there's a need to come back to council, we do. I believe the last one of these was the budget policy in 2020, and we didn't need to have either policy looked at last year. And typically it's about every 2 years that we have found something that we could add clarity or in addition. The prior one for the financial management was to add in that separation reserve that council approved. I believe that was 2018 or 19.
Okay, thank you. It struck me as there's a lot of red lines in there that are coming back to council, I thought.
Yeah, some of those red lines in there strictly are for the clarity portion of it,
right,
and then punctuation and simple things like that.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments, council? I appreciate your attention to detail on this and walking us through all of it and helping us get extra flexibility and being able to work towards future capital projects. So,
all right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. At this time, I would accept a motion.
I move to adopt resolution 614 as presented.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Motion carries. Thank you, council. Okay. And the final item of business this evening is a motion of approval of Sanderling Park Phase 1, the final plat. Ms. Lust.
Thank you again, Mayor. This evening I'll be presenting on the proposed Sanderling Park Phase 1 final plat. So the hearing examiner approved the Kennedy Farm East Preliminary Planned Unit Development, or PUD, on March 19th, 2019. The project has since been renamed to Sanderling Park, and the entire project area is shown on red on this slide. The overall Kennedy Farm East approval was for 435 total lots, comprised of 327 single-family detached homes and 108 single-family attached or townhouse homes on a total of just about 90 acres in the RLD4 zone. The overall project is also subject to a 2007 development agreement amended in 2017. These agreements establish a target average density of between 4 and 6 units per gross acre for Kennedy Farms West and East. The approved Kennedy East, now known as Sanderling Park PUD, density is 4.85 units per gross acre in compliance with the development agreement. There have been a couple of post-decision reviews processed by staff for the Kennedy East area. Only one of those is in the vicinity of Sanderling Park Phase 1, and the request that was approved was to make minor changes in the layout and a lot configuration to accommodate a new community amenity tract, which we'll see later on in this presentation. There is the Phase 1 area as it relates to the overall project. It is the portion on the western part of the project along Hillhurst Road. And here's the proposed plat. Focus on the big rectangle there. The small pop-out rectangle plat sheet just shows the sort of popsicle stick extension there of phase one. Didn't fit on the first page. That exists so that phase one encompasses the entire Hillhurst frontage of the project, but all the lots proposed are shown on the main image there. So the proposal is to subdivide phase one into 46 single-family detached residential lots. The lots range from 4,000 square feet to 7,500 square feet. These are consistent with the lot sizes and density approved through the original Kennedy Farms DA, the Kennedy Farms East preliminary PUD, and subsequent post-decision review. The average lot area in phase one is 5,335 square feet. And as you can see on the image, public streets provide direct access to each of the lots in phase one. Some open space information for you. Again, the larger plat image on the left does show all the lots. The little pop-out in the bottom right just shows the actual full southern extent of the plat to include that little tail to the south. Shown in green are the open space tracks. So tracks A, B, and C are parallel to Hillhurst Road. They're open space tracks to be owned and maintained by the HOA. Tract A includes a public multi-use pathway connecting the Hillhurst sidewalk to South 44th Lane, which is that interior road. All three of those tracks also include the earth tone stone appearance wall and landscaping required for all new subdivisions along Hillhurst Road. And then Tract D, which is the larger open space tract shown here, is a community amenity tract to be owned and maintained by the HOA. The upper right pop-out shows a diagram of proposed improvements in Tract D. It'll include two community buildings, a parking area, pool and splash pad, and patio for the benefit of the Sanderling Park community. It will also include landscaping and a public pathway connecting the streets to the east and west of that tract. So as far as the review of this project goes, staff confirmed that the applicant had addressed all survey comments on March 25th, 2022. Private improvements required for final plat approval are substantially complete. A bond for 120% of the cost of all incomplete public improvements is required at final plat. The applicant submitted a cost estimate for remaining public improvements totaling $269,506.79, which staff confirmed to be accurate. The city engineer will issue a performance bond letter identifying a bond amount of $323,408.15, and a receipt of that bond amount will be required prior to signing the final plat Mylar. Final item to note from staff's review is that the Phase 1 HOA CC&Rs were approved through staff review. And with that, staff does recommend approval of the Sanderling Park Phase 1 final plat. And I'm happy to take any questions. Thanks.
Council, are there any questions for Ms. Lust? No. I have a question. The 25% parks and open space that we have as part of new developments, do the private amenities, can they be applied towards that 20%, or is that is the pool and the community buildings above and beyond that 25%?
So the pool and community buildings were not proposed with the original Kennedy East PUD, so they would be above and beyond that 25%. If I flip back a couple images here showing the phase one in relation to the whole property, you can see the blue ponds and stream. Those are critical areas throughout the center of the site that comprises a good chunk of the open space, and there are also proposed park tracks adjacent to those in future phases.
Thank you. And then I noticed, I think it's 35th Street, and then it's the one of the main, it looks like the main entrance off of Hillhurst, and it looks to be directly across the street from Kennedy. Mm-hmm. South Canyon, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. What is the traffic infrastructure going to look at, like at that intersection on Hillhurst? Because I'm anticipating that's going to be pretty busy once this all gets built out. What's that going to look like?
Yeah, I believe Ms. Hall can address that.
If memory serves, they're building either a standard collector or a residential access. So this is larger than your standard local street. It'll have a 36-foot asphalt. It's still two lanes, but provides parking on both sides. I'm not sure if that answers your question, Mayor.
Will it require a roundabout?
It will not, since the traffic
You're
will be...
sure.
The traffic is... The primary traffic direction is on Hillhurst. There won't... You wouldn't expect a significant amount of traffic crossing from Kennedy Drive into Sanderling Park, right? Most people will be turning right or left onto Hillhurst.
Okay, so I guess my question would be turning left out of either of those neighborhoods, since it's not far from the intermediate middle school, mm-hmm. and that can be a challenge already. I'm wondering if we're going to be having additional infrastructure like meeting left turn lanes that people can turn into to then merge into traffic, or if there's been any thought put to that at this point.
I'm trying to recall. I believe there may be a left turn lane, but I'll check into that and pass the information on to Mr. Stewart to share.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Councillor Onsell, you had some additional questions.
Just another, one other, and I guess it would be Brenda or Steve, and that's the 219th thought of coming into Hillhurst. This is not going to affect that.
So they are proposing in a later phase to build the collector that would ultimately provide, I guess, a backup access from the 219th. Are you thinking of the extension to the I-5 South connection?
Yes.
Yes. So there is going to be a collector that could either be used as part of that or as a secondary route to alleviate traffic on it.
Okay, I just don't want to get closed off at the pass.
Councilor Onslow, if you look at the the rendering before you, just the map, it doesn't really show you the traffic alignments, but it kind of, it is that the only other one that shows the entire plot?
Yeah, I didn't put the entire plot in the presentation because I don't have an updated version.
Not a problem. So there's an updated road alignment that looks at coming off of Hillhurst at the far southern end of Sanderling Park, going to the east from Hillhurst, and then it jogs up just a little bit as you get to, if you see about halfway west to east on the property, there's a farm pond and a creek. On the southern end of that, it will actually, that the roadway will jog up and then back down. There will be a connection on that southeast kind of area just on the bottom there that will connect up with the scenic collector standard. So the collector standard will connect there. Nothing that we're doing here affects that in phase one, but the later phases do have that amended transportation system that does provide an opportunity for a quicker, kind of shorter connection, ultimately as part of the I-5 South Access Project. Obviously, you know, we're still in preliminary analysis for design alternatives for how we might get to there, but it does provide one alternative.
I know that it's in your mind all the time. I just don't want to see a situation come up and say, oh, we should have.
No, if anything, we've actually, the adjusted alignment actually not only preserves that opportunity, but it actually creates a better opportunity for it because it creates a wider cross-section for the roadway so that it is not... it would actually be a wider roadway that would handle more traffic, and it would be less curves that go through the neighborhood. So it would, on the south side of the neighborhood, it actually would create a better connection between the interstate and Hillhurst versus kind of weaving through the neighborhood.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Council, any other questions at this time? All right. Not seeing any additional questions. Can I get a motion?
Yes, I move to approve the Sanderling Park Phase 1 final plat as presented.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Any additional discussion? No. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. Motion carries. Okay, and we again have time for public comment. Anyone wishing to address City Council regarding items not subject to a specific public hearing may come forward at this time to the podium or use the raise hand feature located on the toolbar at the bottom of your Zoom screen. For controls over the phone, press star 9 for raise your hand and press star 6 to mute unmute. Please state your name and limit comment to 3 minutes. Go ahead and join us at the podium.
Good evening, Council. Thank you for the time. My name is Ed Madden, M-A-D-D-E-N. My address is 27407 Northeast 14th Court, Ridgefield, 98642, the zip code, not the city. I live in Helensview. In 2008, the city of Ridgefield became my next-door neighbor and the next-door neighbor of all of Helensview when the city annexed the property around us. My own home that I've been in since 2004 has approximately 600 linear feet along that we are neighbors of. The developer over there has changed the name of the development. It's this week called Greeley Farms. In 2019, and I've been working on this 3 years, five words of the Ridgefield City Development Code: all light trespass is prohibited. 3 years. I still don't have an answer. I sent an email Friday morning, and I addressed it to the mayor, to the assistant, to Mr. Stewart. The chain of command of all the different staff folks I've worked with. And I specifically have requested in that email in writing, according with whatever the RDC code is, that a compliance action be taken against the violator of not only the city's code, but the city's land use hearing officer from 2019 that wasn't enforced, and his most recent decision of July 5th that says the same thing, only much more strict. The hearings officer, on both occasions, said no light trespass or glare beyond the perimeter of the subdivision. In March, the lights came on by my home. I can make shadow puppets in my bedroom at night. Four more houses are about to be built with this new requirement that's old, no light trespass. So I am asking you very seriously, I still would love to work as neighbors. I did not want to get caught up in the bowels of bureaucracy. You've got a big one. And so I think that's my 3 minutes, or 15 seconds. So I really would like to work with you guys as human beings. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to address the council? Go ahead.
My name is Michael Jennings, and there is a big challenge that Clark Collett's Fire and Rescue does perhaps 15 different really, really important things. And when you read what's written, you wouldn't have any idea how important it is. So there needs to be some headlines for each of the 15 things, and then an example of something that the agency did. It's really important, and the average person wouldn't know it because what's written is too complicated. Thank you.
Okay, and it looks like online we have Christine Connolly. The city clerk is unmuting you. And
hi, this is Eric Connolly. The Zoom might be under my wife's name, Christine Connolly. we are both here, but I am speaking. So this is my statements and my statements only. I live at 27901 Northwest 55th Avenue. And the reason that I raised my hand and wanted to comment is that while I generally feel that the city council has done just a marvelous job of managing the development of Ridgefield, the discussions about the Kennedy development that was just voted on and approved, I do not feel that the traffic mitigation is appropriate for that area. I think that that area has already got some traffic issues. At the city council meeting last month, there were some concerns about pedestrian traffic in the area of the sports facility and the high school there, and that is only going to add additional vehicular traffic to that area. And I do believe that roundabouts are in keeping with the character of the city of Ridgefield, and I feel that we should have required that roundabouts be built to accommodate all of that additional development in that area. And that is all that I have to say. I do think that you guys are doing a great job, but I do think that that was a bit of a miss. Thank you for your time.
Is there anyone else, either in person or online, that would like to address the council? Okay, not seeing anyone else. So we will move on to council reports. It has been 3 weeks since we've had our last meeting, council, and I know you've all been quite busy. So if you would please give me your top two events or meetings that you've gone to and your insights on those and why they were impactful, I would appreciate that. And we'll start with you, Councillor Onslow.
Narrowing anything to two for me is very difficult. So the 4th of July is not my project. My wife runs that, and it was excellent. I think it was the largest amount of people we've ever had. The Clark College meeting, groundbreaking, was very interesting, and I was really glad to be there, and I think that we're going to have our hands full with their development, so I think that's something that we need to keep abreast of.
Thank you. Councillor Coker.
My top is really a theme. Over the past few weeks, I've had the opportunity to volunteer with various organizations throughout the city for all of the wonderful events. And it's really rewarding working with these different organizations and individuals that work behind the scenes to make these things happen. Seeing kids, families, new residents, people getting out and exploring Ridgefield and just really enjoying life in Ridgefield, which is obviously one of the greatest things we can all agree on. The thing that stood out to me was the number of new residents that approached me as I was volunteering at these different events, asking how they could get involved and what organizations exist for them to get involved. So just, I guess, refreshing and good to see that continued service theme, even with our new residents.
Give me the phone.
Mayor Pro Tem Akeley.
Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about a volunteer organization that I'm involved with that the NOW program. So we had a meeting on June 28th, and the police department, they had two sergeants there, Sergeant Pettit and Sergeant Gibson. And Sergeant Gibson we had 16 volunteers there and gave some training to us. We watched some training videos, three of them, on three different topics, and they're actually police videos, but there's a lot in those training videos that can be gleaned off to our volunteers. And then we proceeded to discuss the 4th of July and the different duties and tasks and how many volunteers the chief would like. And then that leads me into the 4th of July. So we met down at the police department. Well, so I was on the laser light show because during the day I was involved in the parade with the rest of the council. But we had a whole bunch of volunteers during the parade at every intersection, and they knew exactly what they were doing because they were lined out by the police. But when I met our volunteers for the laser light show down at the police department, so professional, Sergeant Pettit lined us all out on what the goals were and gave us some paperwork, gave us keys to four golf carts and whatnot. So we were we all had radios. We had flashlights with big orange cones on them, you know, to direct traffic at night. So all the safety was taken care of. I just want to say it's a pleasure to volunteer with people you enjoy working with that have the same passion as you. You know, I come from a family of law enforcement, and so when this program came up, you know, I decided I wanted to join it, and it's been 2 years now, and it's just morphing into a really good relationship with the different residents that are volunteering in it. And I find it really enjoyable, and I know it helps the police department out, and that makes the volunteers happy, and it's just a pleasure to be a member. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Wells.
Yes. At the last council reports, we were limited to one, and my one had three parts. This time, we're limited to two, and I'm only going to talk about one. So I'm making amends. And the 4th of July parade, it was really, really exceptional. The only problem, I got a frog in my throat this evening. The only problem I had is the chauffeur that was pulling our float. I think he must be a long-haul truck driver because he had the pedal to the metal. And every time I would stop and adhere to the rules to hand the kids candy, then I was three floats behind, and then I was out of breath when I got back up to our float. So I think we need to put a speed limiter on the vehicle that he runs next year so it only can run at an idle. But it was a terrific parade. We had so many people in town. I got off the parade first because we were the second float, and I circled around to 5th, is that City Hall? Around to 5th, and there was people there. So I got to sit in my rig, air-conditioned. I couldn't go through because they were in their chairs. I watched the last half of the parade, and then people finally moved their chairs, and I got out on Pioneer Street, and all I could see, clear up to here, to Rourke and above, was wall-to-wall people. The street was full, the sidewalks were full, and everybody was migrating to downtown. They were, majority of the people were, and it was a terrific celebration for our community.
Thank you, Councillor Chipman.
It was, and I had to run to keep up with that truck. I hadn't run for a long time.
Speed limit.
So let's see, two things. So on the 28th, there was an employee picnic that for the city that was at the Raptor game, and that was a fun thing. My family took part in that, and to get to talk to some of the employees and enjoy picnic with them in the Raptor game. That was something different that we hadn't done before. So that was something enjoyable. This morning we had a great Main Street meeting in here this morning, and Dean, and I never pronounce his last name correctly, Maldonado. All right. Dean gave us all some excellent information and training and how buildings are financed and work and all these kinds of interesting information about building and property management and whatever. And I think it was something that a lot of us didn't know, a lot of that, and why he builds certain things and why he suggests certain, you know, certain businesses and whatever. It was very good. And then, of course, fire department, your gentleman that works for you, did a great job talking with us about why we need so badly. And I've personally had to call the ambulance several times to my house, and I know how bad it would be if there wasn't one available for 20 minutes. So I'm a big supporter of that. So those were two events that I personally really enjoyed.
And Councillor Cole.
Okay, yeah. I liked Councillor Coker's approach to this and did it in themes, and so I'm going to do a theme as well. And, you know, after such a dreary spring, and the sun comes out, people come out, and you know, it's, we're at a busy time of year, and seeing, so the first theme is community, being part of the 4th of July celebration here. I mean, it just really celebrates not just our nation's independence, but just our community as a whole. And it was a very uplifting day, I think, just to be able to get out, see your neighbors, talk to people, connect with other people. And I've been doing that over the last few weeks, you know, just one-on-one in different groups with our Richfield City employees, and just seeing what a remarkable community we have. And it's just a reminder to me of why I wanted to be involved with the city. So that was the first one. And then growth. That was a massive celebration. I think that's, you know, I haven't lived here terribly long, but that was quite a few people here. And then on top of that, just, you know, attending a couple of different ribbon cuttings and seeing all the businesses coming here. And it's a really exciting time for our city. And so as those things kind of merge together, our community, as it grows, I think, there, you know, it's just a really fun time, you know, being out, you know, connecting with our neighbors, and then hearing, you know, the good and the bad and all the concerns and everything in between. And so it's been a good couple of weeks, and looking forward to just all the future business this summer and connecting with more neighbors. So that's it.
Awesome. Thank you. My two quick things were, on Friday, we had both Main Street Day and the one-year anniversary of the new library building. It's been a year. Can you believe it? And the thing that I really enjoyed was, when I was down there and all the families were playing at Overlook Park and they had the snow cones and the band going and then all the activities at Davis Park for the library, I didn't know anybody. And that was actually really cool, because that meant there was a whole lot of new people who were discovering our downtown, maybe for the first time, and hopefully we'll be coming back again and going to the park and then going to the restaurants. And I just thought that was really great, and to see that and to see all these families enjoying it the way that I used to do when my kids were little. So that made me really happy. And then I guess it was yesterday? Yes. City Manager Steve Stewart and I took Representative Arbarno. We're now in the 20th legislative district, and he is now one of our representatives, and it is extremely important that we build these relationships with our representatives in Olympia. And he took a couple hours out of his day for us to take him around and really show him everything that's going on in Ridgefield and successes that we've had with projects that we partnered with the legislature on, and potential future projects that he could help us with. So that was really great to lay that groundwork. So yeah, we did that. And then finally, we have a couple of appointments this evening. The first one is the appointment of a salary commission member. And will I need a motion for this, Mr. Stewart? Okay. I would like to appoint Maria Swinger Inskeep to be a salary commissioner. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? All right. Maria is here with us this evening. You want to wave so we know who you are? Hi. She sat through the whole meeting. That shows dedication and commitment. And you don't need to talk, so are you good? Okay. And then the second appointment I have this evening is of two council members to serve on the 2023 Budget Advisory Committee. I would like to appoint Councilors Coker and Chipman. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
I second.
Great, thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, so moved. Thank you, Council. And we will move on to staff reports. Mr. Stewart.
I have nothing this evening other than turning it over to my truly highly capable management team for their updates, unless you have any questions for me.
Okay. Ms. Howell.
Hi, I have some great news. The poles are coming down at Royal Road, and I'm hoping by the time we do the development tour on Monday and we drive through, we will see some activity. So I think we're all looking forward to that. The second item that has become an issue over the last couple of weeks, it is an issue pretty much every summer as people start irrigating their lawns and the contractors out on the construction sites start using water for dust control, is that we have intense peak hour use of our water, causing us causing consternation. Although we recover during the off-peak hours, however, it is very important for people to conserve. We recently put out some some social media posts requesting that people, if your address ends in an even number, that you should only water on even numbered days of the month, and if odd numbered, then on odd numbered days of the month, and that your lawn really only needs about an inch of water per month. It does not need, or per week, pardon me. That would be better. But it only requires about an inch of water per week, and conservation is critically important to our community. And thank you. That's all I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mayor. Only thing I have is I want to thank Councilors Coker and Chipman for the Budget Advisory Committee postings, and I'll be sending out some invites to the meetings tomorrow.
Thank you. Okay. Ms. Lust.
Thank you, Mayor. I do not have anything to add this evening, but happy to take any questions.
Ms. Notanaris.
Like I said earlier, August is an event-heavy month. We have lots coming up. National Night Out is the first one in August. That's the first Tuesday, August 2nd. I do need to give credit to the police department for planning that one. August 6th is First Saturday. It's the day of festivals in Ridgefield. We will have Paddle for Life dragon boat races at the waterfront. The Art Association is doing a forest fair at Abrams, which includes a large number of artisans and food for the Lions Club and Beer Garden with Main Street. And downtown, we always have vendors at Overlook Park and at Davis, and on Mill Street will be City Days. We are featuring large equipment and parks and trails and stormwater information with a focus on the Public Works Department. And we also have a C-Tran bus that will be helping people find all of those different locations. So lots going on First Saturday in August. August 20th is Farm to Table. We, I think, have four tickets left, so that is almost sold out. And we are also continuing with Meet Me on Wednesday's walking tours and our Musicians in the Park at noon on Wednesdays. And I think that's it.
Great, thank you. And then, Ms. Parker, are you with us?
I am with you, but I don't have anything to report, Madam Mayor. So I'm happy to answer any questions, and hope you have a good night.
Great. Thank you for being here. And finally, Chief Brooks.
I was just going to mention, I was very proud with the Ridgefield Police Department, how well they managed 4th of July and all the events. There was a lot going on for a very few amount of people. And to echo what Mayor Pro Tem Akeley was saying, we couldn't do it without the volunteers. And we are very blessed to have a community that's so engaged. So happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr.
Okay. Wells. Yeah, I have got one other comment that was brought up yesterday at the port meeting. And on the 24th, down at Abrams Park, they're going to have a memorial service or whatever for John Burroughs at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I thought John Burroughs, for you don't know us, lived with us 100 and how was he? 101 or 102? 103? Okay. And so that's happening. So I thought that might be appropriate to bring up.
Thank you. Oh, Mayor Pro Tem?
Yeah. Sorry. Ms. Howell, on the water conservation, I had an idea. I just wanted to get it out there so I don't forget. Where I live in our HOA, some of our neighbors have requested to put down some really nice AstroTurf that you don't need to ever water or mow. And I saw some really nice AstroTurf over in the Hillhurst neighborhood where they do allow that. And anyways, they don't allow it in our neighborhood. And I was wondering if, I mean, because then it would save water. And because we waste a ton of water. It all just rolls right down into the storm sewer after, because the grass don't hold it. So anyways, just a thought. I don't know if we could look at that, an ordinance that would allow it, and then HOAs, you know, we could set a standard for higher end, what do they call it, AstroTurf, higher-end AstroTurf that doesn't degrade the look of the neighborhood. I think that's why our HOA didn't allow it, because some of it looks kind of cheesy, you know, if you buy the really cheap stuff down at Home Depot. But just a thought, maybe, I don't know what Mr. Stewart thinks of that, if that's something, you know, we could talk about or gather some data on, or if, even if it was passed, you know, would HOAs have to allow some AstroTurf? It would save water.
Happy to get some information for you, sir.
Okay, and with that, this meeting is adjourned.